Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Boy, there is a lot to cover. There are two debates going on, and there's really exciting development in both debates. You know that I'm debating entropy and evolution over at theologyonline.com, and Will Duffy, the founder of the Collaborators Project, is debating open theism, the idea that the future is not settled but open, over at theologyweb.com, T-Web and T-O-L. And there have been great developments in both. In my debate, we're discussing an article in the American Journal of Physics written by Dan Steyer, a professor from England. And Dan Steyer has now joined the fray, and he's come over to T-O-L. He's read the debate, and he's been posting in the discussion thread on TOL. That's exciting. There's got to be 10,000 posts on the internet about his article on evolution that was published in November 2008. And of all that activity, he has come to theologyonline.com, which is a web forum, a ministry of Denver Bible Church that was founded, how many years ago is that? Now, in the 90s. By elders of Denver Bible Church, and he's come to TOL to weigh in on the debate. Of course, I'm criticizing his article, so he is defending himself, but it's really interesting. And then in Will Duffy's debate about the future, whether the future is settled or open, he's debating Joltus. And Joltus, it's quite amazing. This is a brief debate. In fact, both of these are relatively brief compared to the battle royales we've had at Bob Inyart Live over the years and at Theology Online. These are reasonably brief, and Will Duffy is debating Joltus, who seems to be very well informed in theology and, you know, certainly a worthy opponent on this topic of is the future settled or open. And Joltus says this at the end of his post. He's just posted today, and he says, Dear Will Duffy, actually Doogie Duff is the handle. Dear Will Duffy, I will say this, you have some very good points here, causing me to reassess my thoughts. Unquote. Wow, that at least, I mean, that he's not saying, oh, I agree with you. But that's the kind of humility and interaction that's missing in so many debates. So many debates. When an opponent makes a good point, I like to point out, hey, that's a good point. And if an opponent could quote a Bible verse, and that Bible verse looks like my opponent is right, I'm wrong, I like to say, this verse, on the surface, this verse makes it sound like you're correct and I'm wrong. So I will acknowledge that. Now let's consider. But a lot of people just refuse to interact that way, and I'm thankful that Joltus has indicated this, and Will Duffy's argument in this one-on-one over at Theology Web is focused on the question of, is God free? And there's an open theist movement, and it's made a bit of a strategic error. It has focused for decades now on man's freedom, sort of like Arminians focus on man's freedom as they debate Calvinist. And there is a bit of a strategic error, a tactical error, when you're trying to show someone that the future is open, and you begin and end your argument with man's freedom. I believe you could make the argument there, but it is so much less powerful than when you argue God's freedom. Is God free? Is God able to be creative? Was he ever creative? Before the foundation of the earth, did he have the option to create or not? Did he have the option to create in certain ways or not? Could he have added an extra butterfly on the earth if he wanted to? Could he write a new song? Could he today write a new song? You know, these questions. And the Bible tells us that our God is a creative God, so clearly he is creative. So it's just a lot of fun to see people think through, even wrestle with these fundamental ideas. It's a lot of fun. And I want to go to the debate I'm having at Theology Online. Oh, and by the way, also we hope to talk about some of the global warming news today. Some of the global warming news, the cold weather in Las Vegas, Nevada, and the record snowfall. Has it been more snow in December than Las Vegas has ever had since they started keeping records? It's more than 70 years ago. It's pretty funny. And then the tragedy of the riots in Athens and Greece, and some of the particulars about those riots. We had a Bible tour of Greece a couple years ago, Bob and Yurt Live, and we had a wonderful time, 2 weeks in Greece. And while we were there, our tour guide, Kostas, explained to us that the law in Greece was if you give a Bible tract to a teenager, it's a crime with a serious penalty. The penalty was the equivalent of if you sexually molested a child. It is against the law to share the gospel with a teenager in Greece. It's against the law. How's that? And by the gospel, I mean if you have a gospel tract that says on the cover, believe in Jesus Christ, and inside, if it says Jesus Christ died for your sin, if you believe in his death and resurrection, you will be saved. That's against the law. And Greece is what, 99% Christian? Well, it's Greek Orthodox, Christian. They got tens of thousands of churches and religious shrines and sites and monasteries. And they have manuscripts of the Bible going back, you know, 1,500 years and more. And it's just bizarre. Okay, now, the debate over at Theology Online. It's fun that Professor Dan Steyer, has weighed in on this debate on evolution. He is the author of this article in the American Journal of Physics from last month, November 2008. The article was titled Entropy and Evolution. And I just want to share with you something that one of the atheists at TOL wrote to Dan Steyer. He wrote, now this guy, his name is The Phi, and I've met The Phi on one of our family vacations. We went to Seattle, in fact, Canada, had a tremendous time, Vancouver Island, Victoria, and took the ferry across to the Olympic Peninsula. Where was that? Port Angeles, was it? And then we went to Seattle, and while at Seattle, on the piers there, they have the piers going out into the sound at one of those fabulous fish restaurants, I met The Phi. He and I arranged to meet while I was on my vacation, and we talked. We had a very cordial meeting, enjoyable. But he's an atheist and an evolutionist and, of course, an old earther. And when I was debating some old earth creationist from Reasons to Believe, that's the Hugh Ross group, The Phi flew to Denver for the debate. It was a moderated debate, and it went really well. In fact, we sell a CD of it, a CD of the debate, and we have all kinds of resources on that CD. And The Phi indicated that night and later that the old earth side lost the debate, that our side, the young earth side, won the debate. So he has, you know, that degree of integrity, that even though he's an old earther, he said the old earthers didn't do a good job and the young earth creationists won the debate. Okay, well, The Phi, he, as soon as he saw that Dan Steyer himself came to TOL and began commenting on the debate, The Phi wrote a post in the discussion thread. You can't post in the debate itself. That's a one-on-one. Only Johnny and Bob Inyar are able to post in there. But there's a discussion thread, and they link to each other. And The Phi wrote to Dan Steyer, Dan, fair warning, I think you have stepped in it now. One thing Reverend Enyart delights in is getting scientists with name recognition to respond to him. Well, that's true. Who doesn't like to talk to people who are known in, you know, whatever area you're interested in? To which the professor cheerfully and humbly replied to the PHI, Dan Steyer wrote, well, I'm safe then because I have no name recognition. That was nice of him. I mean, he does, obviously. He's a published author. But that was nice of him. He says, well, I'm safe then, PHI, because I have no name recognition. To which the PHI replied, the physicist on TOL, the PHI, to which the PHI replied, Dan, perhaps before, but not now, whether you like it or not, in authoring your seminal paper, you have joined the ranks of a small cadre of very influential scientists in the creationism-evolution debate. Your paper is generating a lot of attention in many forums like this. It has passed out of your hands now. The PHI. It's fun. It is. It's just fun. And so what I'm thankful for is even though Dan Steyer is posting at Theology Online and he disagrees with me, I'm criticizing him for furthering the confusion, the scientific confusion between heat and information. Some people think that, well, life, biological life, is based on the information content in the DNA molecule. And some people think that, well, even though random changes to information might destroy that information, it might degrade it, it might move it from order to disorder, that has to do with information theory. It's been proven by physicists that entropy could decrease, like in the sun. In the sun, entropy is decreasing. And when you go from hot to cold, entropy decreases. But the solar system, as it's being heated by the sun, the entropy of the solar system is increasing by even a greater amount. And so physicists point out that, hey, entropy can decrease. Naturally, it happens all the time. It's not unusual. Entropy can decrease. And so they make this conversion. They interchange these as though they were units where you could take some heat entropy and exchange it for an increase in information and complexity of information. The two are different domains. They're different disciplines. Information is not physical. It could be represented by physical objects, but information itself is not physical. And heat and energy states and the availability of energy, that's a physical thing. That has to do with physics. And so it's wrong to confuse the two. It's wrong to confuse heat with information. And I observe that countless creationists and evolutionists confuse heat and information. When they talk about entropy, they forget to distinguish between the two. And when an evolutionist sees that physically entropy can decrease locally, naturally, they say, oh, look, entropy could decrease in the sun. And entropy could decrease locally as long as it's increasing somewhere else. And so they say, see, entropy is not a problem for evolution. And what they don't realize is entropy is a more broad issue. It's a bigger issue than just heat. A lot of people don't realize that. And my goal is to help those that I interact with to distinguish the two. So let me put it as clearly as I can, even for the PHI, who occasionally listens to this program. Hi, PHI, how are you doing? Number one, there is a broad concept of entropy that encompasses differing fields, including information, physics, and even, say, sociology. Right? Jeremy Rifkin wrote a book on Entropy, A New Worldview, about human social structures breaking down. And he based it, of all things, on the second law of thermodynamics. So the concept of entropy, there's a broad concept of entropy that spans different fields. That's number one, broad concept of entropy. Number two, there is heat entropy, which could be considered a consequence of the second law of thermodynamics, heat entropy. Number three, the broad concept of entropy is not a consequence of the second law of thermodynamics. The broad concept. Now, in the discussion thread, the evolutionists are just falling all over themselves with an inability to follow that logic that I just laid out. There's a broad concept of entropy that includes all different fields, including information and physics. There's a narrow definition of entropy, heat entropy, which is related to the second law of thermodynamics. And the conclusion, therefore, the broad concept of entropy is not a consequence of the second law of thermodynamics. It's not. It's a bigger issue. And so then I claim that there is evidence. Now, I don't claim to be able to prove this, but I claim that there is evidence that the broad concept of entropy, that is, things tend to go from order to disorder, things tend to break down in regards to thermodynamics and physics, energy that is in a highly usable state, eventually it is in a less usable state. I submit that there is evidence that the broad concept of entropy is an attribute of reality. The broad concept. And it permeates different aspects of reality. Now, that's not proven, but there is evidence to that effect. Evidence, because there are scientists who look at information entropy, and information is not physical, and they say, you know, information tends to behave the way availability of energy behaves. There are similar ways they behave. And random changes to information make it less available, less usable, sort of like energy becomes less usable over time. So I'm trying to clarify those issues, and I am thankful that even the Phi and others at Theology Online, other evolutionists, are agreeing that it is important to clarify this confusion and to try to separate energy from information. And it's been my observation that evolutionists are very hesitant to talk about information. They don't want to do it. You know, the idea that there has been evolution and we've gone from a single-celled organism up to man, well, that kind of Darwinian evolution, even a single-celled organism with no nucleus, all the way up to a human being. Now, that involves a massive increase in information in the genome, in the DNA, the content of the organism. In the genetic information, it has to increase dramatically. So a couple years ago, I was debating the same guy on TOL, Johnny, who's a medical researcher down in Florida. And Johnny stated, we were in a debate about Darwinism and whether Darwinism is possible. And I'm making some similar arguments. And Johnny actually wrote this. He wrote, I'm not looking at it. I just say it from memory from 2 years ago. He wrote that evolution is not about an increase in information. It's just startling to me. Startling. Because they'll say, well, if somebody gets a disease, that's evolution. Okay. That's not very helpful because creationists believe that people get a disease. We all agree with that. And sometimes you can have mutation upon mutation upon mutation, and some species, maybe a bird that used to be able to fly, can't fly. And so they'll say, that's evolution. Okay, that's de-evolution. Things are breaking down, and both sides agree that biological species and kinds, that they can break down. We agree with that. The debate is over whether or not you could go from molecules to man, from a single-celled living organism to a human being. And that kind of evolution, and that's what most people mean when they are asked, do you believe in evolution? They don't interpret that as, do you believe that diseases exist? They don't interpret it that way. They don't interpret that as meaning, do you believe that organisms die or that species go extinct? If any change is defined by as evolution, well, then, yeah, there's evolution. But do we go from a single-celled creature up to a human being? And when you ask people, do you believe in evolution, that is what they are answering. Do I believe that animals have gone through a progression from the most simple up to a human being? And when they say yes or no, that's the Darwinian evolution they're talking about. And that involves primarily, more than any other consideration, that involves an increase of information by orders of magnitude. Because biologically, an organism is defined by his DNA. Even a plant, right? Trees. Trees, are, how is a tree built? By the DNA in the nucleus of a plant cell. So trees, plants, have DNA. And it describes how to build a tree. So the phi is, I'm thankful, concurring that, yes, we need to clarify the difference between heat, physics, and information. But I am debating Johnny, and Johnny is the one who famously said, famously on TOL a couple years ago, that evolution is not about an increase in information. That's not what evolution is about. And I offered him the opportunity to retract it. And he said, quote me if you want. I'm standing by my statement 100%. So, and I view that as being a little bit stubborn, you know. So we're having a great debate over at Theology Online. And if you're interested in evolution, creation, science, you might want to head over there and join the fray. Because not only can you read about it, you could also join in the debate and make comments. All right, so we've been talking about global warming. Last week we did the interview with the author of It's the S-U-N, Not Your S-U-V. By the way, our phone number here at Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-N-YART, 1-800-836-9278. And we're so thankful that there's a friend of Bob and Yart Live that has come to town to visit and recognized that this time of the year, and also with the financial crisis in the country, Bob and Yart Live is struggling financially and has offered a gift to help us pay for the airtime for an entire month. That's pretty incredible, pretty wonderful. So please, if you can, this time of the year, remember Bob and Yart Live if you'd like to see the work we do continue and reach more people. All right, last week we interviewed the guy who wrote the book, It's the S-U-N, Not Your S-U-V, Against the Global Warming Hype. And we talked about it being minus 81 degrees in Siberia and to expect snow in Southern California and an Arctic blast. And sure enough, now it's snowing in Las Vegas, or it has been snowing, and it's the most snow they've ever received in the month of December since the start of records back 1937. So, and then in Southern California, Malibu. Snow snarled major mountain highways and even sprinkled Malibu yesterday as a cold storm hit parts of California. One person was killed. That's tragic. And an overflowing river on the U.S.-Mexico border led to the evacuation of people. So a lot of freezing cold weather, and it's funny, it's called the Al Gore effect, because the Associated Press reported this week on Al Gore speaking with Barack Obama about global warming and urging him to protect the world from global warming. And pretty much since they spoke, the country's been in a deep freeze. Well, the world. All right, we're almost out of time, but the riots going on almost 2 weeks now in Athens and elsewhere in Greece. The police fatally shot a 15-year-old a couple weeks ago. And now hundreds of businesses have been smashed, burned, or looted. Gangs of youth have fought running battles with riot police, and every night for a week or so now. The riots have been fed by what the media says is Greece's conservative government. It's easy to do, right? They call the Nazis right-wingers. And the Nazis, that stands for National Socialist, Nazi, N-A-Z-I, National Socialist. Socialists are left-wingers. Remember the Red Revolution, the Reds, the socialist governments in Asia? And so in America, the media switched the red states, which used to be the Democrats, because they were pro-socialism, and the Republicans had the blue states, and they switched it. But maybe that's fitting, because the Bush administration has pushed America further into socialism by far than any previous administration, so maybe that's fitting. 1,000 demonstrators in Greece joined a Communist Party-backed peaceful march through Athens. You know, it's weird. The Communist Party, they must be envious. They see the cops killing a kid, and they think back to the time when their comrades were murdering millions of people a year, and they must be think the police are amateurs. So, and protest groups are demanding more money for poor families. That's it. Socialism, right? Communism. Hey, Maranatha Christian Center, what a great school.